Thank you, Chonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, August the 11th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga. Here are our top stories this evening. President Robert Mugabe leads the nation in saluting the country's defense forces for their work, but the opposition boycotts the event, citing the use of such events by the ruling party to denigrate opposing parties.
It turned out to be just a charade. It's a useless day, to be honest. Because even those in the defense forces, particularly the lower ranks, are actually underpaid. They are literally not getting the best out of what we expect as civil servants. So really, these people are not getting paid much. There is nothing for them to celebrate.
Economic analysts dismissed President Mugabe's assertion at the Heroes Acre yesterday that his government is serious about addressing economic challenges facing the nation, saying he has run out of ideas.
That commission can be established and overnight identify what exactly is supposed to be done. But the question now is, are they going to get to implement that? And no one trusts this government with implementing anything.
Chiefs in Mashonaland Central lead the way in exhuming and giving decent burials to freedom fighters who died during the liberation struggle. President Robert Mugabe says it was not easy integrating the warring parties ZIPRA and ZANLA on one hand and the Rhodesia Defence Forces on the other after a brutal war that left thousands dead. Addressing thousands of people who thronged the National Sports Stadium to commemorate the National Defence Forces Day, Mr. Mugabe said the Defence Forces are instrumental in the socio-economic development of the country by guaranteeing peace and stability. President Mugabe commended the defense forces for their community work, which includes construction and humanitarian work. Defense Forces Day is commemorated every second Tuesday of August. Retired Colonel Chinga Dube, ZANU-PF legislator for Makokoba constituency in Bulawayo, tells reporter Chris Gande the defense forces remain united despite the integration of former foes.
Well, the Defense Forces Day is a usual holiday where most of defense forces put it aside to display what they do and what their work is composed of. And other than being protective of their state and so forth, but there are not more other things they do to demonstrate to the population, to the civilians, what they are capable of doing, such as parachuting, displaying what some of their tactics are, as well as giving speeches on what they actually do, helping the civilian population, building roads, schools, or something. This is the day when all these things are made known to the ordinary people.
Can you tell us what is your view of how the three forces, ZIPRA, ZANLA, and the Rhodesia Front combined? And do you see any differences right now?
No, I think our integration was very successful. The British helped us to make one army.
That was retired Colonel Chinga Dube, ZANU-PF legislator for Makokoba constituency in Bulawayo. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare. Conspicuously absent from today's Defense Forces Day commemorations were members of the opposition, who were also absent from yesterday's Heroes Day event. Political commentator Brilliant Mhlanga says the opposition will continue to boycott such events, especially after the country's service chief's statement some years ago, openly declaring their support and allegiance to ZANU-PF and Mr. Mugabe.
Well, to be honest, it would have been a special day if everything was normal in Zimbabwe, if Zimbabwe was running as a normal state like any other state. But given the current situation, both economically and politically, we are forced to state that this is turned out to be just a charade. It's a useless day, to be honest. Because even those in the defense forces, particularly the lower ranks, are actually underpaid. They are literally not getting the best out of what we expect as civil servants. So really, these people are not getting paid much. There is nothing for them to celebrate. It's just the leadership. It's a political stunt that serves a particular political class. Robert Mugabe and his cronies. Nothing more.
In the past, we have heard some service chiefs say that they will never salute anyone who was not involved in the Liberation War. What can you say about that, looking at the current political situation?
Well, it speaks to the idiocy of the whole political setup that we have in Zimbabwe, where the discourse is that you must have been in the liberation struggle, you must be ZANU in order for you to be given all the respect that you deserve if you are to be in the leadership of the state. That itself tells us a lot about where Zimbabwe has been and where Zimbabwe is going. It is in fact a pointer that there is serious moral degeneration, there is serious lack of principles even in those that are in the leadership.
That was political commentator Brilliant Mhlanga. He spoke with Studio 7's Chris Gande from London. Zimbabwe yesterday celebrated its late and living heroes, but many across the country still do not know where their sons and daughters, uncles and aunts who failed to survive the liberation struggle are buried. Many lie in unmarked graves in and outside the country. Chief Clemens Nembire is leading the exhumation of the remains of struggle heroes in Mashonaland Central. He spoke with Sandra Nyaira on the work his team is doing to ensure those who died during the liberation struggle are given a decent burial.
We are having some concerted efforts to make sure these remains of freedom fighters are reburied. But the challenges which we are facing, we do not know these people. We don't have their identity. That is the challenge we are facing.
When you find these human remains, what is the process of taking them from, you know, point A to point B, that point where you finally lay them to rest? What goes on even though you don't know their names? What needs to be done in that process?
Normally, there is a committee which was set up by the government. It is led by Comrade Retanure. Say if there is an identity of a freedom fighter who was killed in my area, we try by all means to find his area local. We find the relatives so that they can come to my area and remove the bones so that they can take those bones to my area.
In terms of financial resources, how are you managing this whole process?
We are financed by the government through the Minister of Home Affairs.
For how long have you been doing this process of exhuming and laying to rest, you know, some of Zimbabwe's gallant sons who died during the liberation struggle?
We have been doing this, Sandra, for the past 5 years, but the issues or the liability which we are facing is that of finances. Normally, the finances are very erratic, and the committee may not be able to carry out the exercise due to the finances. So if the finances are available, then we continue doing the exercise.
Is this program replicated elsewhere in other parts of the country, especially those areas where liberation fighters used to use, like probably in Manicaland, say, for example?
Sandra, it is throughout Zimbabwe, and some of the freedom fighters died in Mozambique and some in Zambia. There are so many people who are going to exhume these bodies outside the country of Zimbabwe. Recently, a team of comrades went to Zambia, so I am told. They just went there for identification purposes. Normally, we appeal to our assessors so that they can help us in identifying these remains. If identified, as I told you, if the person comes from Tare, we try by all means to repatriate those bones.
But would you say now you have a number of how many people have been reburied since you started this program?
We did a lot at Chibondo, if you still remember. We buried a number of comrades at Chibondo. We exhumed them from a mine shaft and reburied them. As I'm talking, there are so many bones which are lying idle in my area known as Zero Mountain. We are trying by all means to make sure these bones are reburied. But the challenge is just that of identification.
So if they have not been identified, what then happens?
If they are not identified, we appeal to the committee so that they can be buried in mass graves. But we have not done that yet.
Some people have been asking about the government in itself, that is it really sincere in terms of the resources that are allocated to such activities to make sure that all this is done, that needs to be done to make sure those who died during the liberation struggle, fighting for Zimbabwe's struggle, are given a decent burial. Do you have enough resources from the government?
The government is very sincere to make sure the Ghana servants in Zimbabwe are reburied in a decent manner. But the challenge is containing the finances. We are trying our best to make sure we raise the finances, to make sure we rebuild this gallant servant. So we will do our best. I'm sure in a year or so, we will be able to overcome this challenge.
How are you fundraising? Do you have any specific programs that you are targeting to make sure that at least you raise enough resources to make sure that all those who are lying in unmarked graves around the country or even outside are brought into the country for decent burials?
We don't have programs to raise the funds, but we rely on the fiscal. We are given the money from the fiscal, then we carry out the exercise.
So how big is your team?
We have a team comprising 10 people. 3 are women and 7 are men.
That was Chief Clemence Nembire speaking with Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira from Mount Darwin. President Mugabe's assertion at the Heroes Acre yesterday that the government will establish a commission to address economic challenges facing the nation, attract foreign investors, and fund the Zuma Said program to revive the ailing economy has been met with mixed feelings, with independent economists saying the government has run out of ideas of resuscitating the economy, while most ZANU-PF supporters back Mr. Mugabe's plans. Mr. Mugabe says a National Competitiveness Commission is being set up to address challenges faced by industries and to review legislation that discourage businesses from investing in the country. Economic commentator Bulisani Ncube says President Mugabe's plans for economic revival will only remain a dream as the government has failed to implement them in the past.
This country is never short of the right economic blueprint, but what is short is implementation. That commission can be established and overnight identify what exactly is supposed to be done, but the question now is, are they going to be able to implement that? And no one trusts this government with implementing anything. I remember during the inclusive government era, the NCC went through a process of identifying all the legislation which we have to with the national recommendations. And these are the laws which inhibit investment, and therefore, and even others, what they went to look at all laws, the company laws and everything else, and they made those recommendations. So that is not new. It has been done before, but it has never been implemented. I'm hoping that this time around, while the idea is good, but I remain very skeptical about the laws who are supposed to implement those things.
President Mugabe also says $27 billion is needed to finance projects under the government's Zuma Said. Do you see this succeeding?
That kind of money will remain a dream because it needs a lot of work. Investment. You need direct investment, you need loans from other multilateral institutions, which we are not in any way in a position to actually raise in the PF to get loans from those. So, again, that tells you the presidential hope remains a hope, not a reality or something which is practically achievable.
That was economic commentator Bulisani Ncube on the line with us from Bulawayo.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, a close look at the country's economy as job losses mount. But first, a look at regional and international news. A former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has signed an official court document declaring that she has turned over all relevant emails sent and received on her personal email account during her tenure as the nation's top diplomat. The statement signed by Clinton was filed in federal court on Monday and comes with the penalty of perjury if the court determines she purposely falsified any information. China's central bank devalued its currency today in what is said was a one-time move to make rates more market-oriented. The yuan is allowed to fluctuate 2% above or below a central point set daily by the People's Bank of China. The bank cut the central rate by 1.9% as a result of the change that it said would enhance the market orientation and benchmark status of central parity. And the United Nations says thousands of native Somalis are returning from war-torn Yemen despite a serious humanitarian crisis at home. The UN Human Rights Office said today that nearly 29,000 people have arrived in Somalia from Yemen since March, most of them women and children, with more expected in coming months. The returns across the Gulf of Aden are a reversal of a long-term trend that has been seen hundreds of thousands of Somalis flee the country to escape the conflict, hunger, and poverty. In our economy segment, we are looking at the ripple effects of the continuing job losses, with reports saying close to 20,000 people have lost their jobs in the past 3 weeks following a Supreme Court ruling allowing employers to fire workers at will on 3 months' notice. Most of these dismissed workers are said to be failing to pay rentals in the process, affecting landlords of income. In our discussion, we have Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Union Secretary General Japhet Moyo and Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe Director John Mufukari. Moyo says the number of people seeking assistance through the country's social services department will increase as jobs continue to be lost. Mufukari says there are serious distortions of the Zimbabwean economy today, as seen in the prices being charged not only by state enterprises, but across the board.
Yes, you might have heard a situation where somebody is living in somebody's house rent-free because he's supposed to be at work, but he's not being paid at work. So there is the hope that one day I am going to be paid, and the landlord undertakes that this person is at work and maybe one day he is going to be paid. And we are just going on creating further and further distortions. What companies did in the light of the Zuma judgment was to seriously downsize to the point where they can now start operating efficiently. Because most of these companies that did this, if you look at them really, they are technically bankrupt. So yes, I can understand the misery and the pain that it is causing. But honestly, other than the Greek situation, there is no other way we are going to get out of this war. Greek is lucky because it has got the European Union to bail it out. We don't have anybody to bail us out.
Mr. Moyo, your take on this issue?
We did indicate when this madness started 3 weeks ago that it's not going to be confined to employer-employee relationship only. It's going to affect the world economy. It's going to affect other people. The aggressive demand is likely to go down. People offering merchandise goods are going to be affected. Banks are going to be affected. Those who are institutions who rely on rentals, their properties are not going to be taken up. So we did mention that this issue is going to affect the entire economy. I think we clearly indicated that we agree that companies have to downsize, but I think it should be way to think it has to happen. And currently we have a situation where people are victimized. Businesses themselves are going to suffer from this.
Mr. Mufukari, what do you suggest can be done to solve this problem?
As far as we are concerned, if there was a sensible way of downsizing when things are not right, we would never have got to the explosion that came about as a result of the Zuma case. All we ask is that there be a non-accepted way of people parting ways when the situation is no longer right. And from our point of view, for workers to say, I must be getting some other package in addition to everything else that has happened, to us is not really, really fair on the employer. The employer has been paying a regular wage. The employer has also been contributing to a pension fund. And when employment terminates, the worker will now be looking to the pension fund that both he and the employer were contributing towards for sustenance henceforth. But for the worker to now say, you were contributing to a pension fund, I still want another payment. Where is that payment going to come from?
Mr. Moyo.
I think we need to give reasons why you not need so many numbers of workers in your entity. We need to promote a social dialogue, social justice at the workplace. It's very unfair that a person who has served for more than 10 years told within hours that he or she is the next package. I think that's very, very, very unfair. Secondly, we are on the call of the employer, which is the employer who decides when to produce. It is the employers who are planning business, and they're at fault in the way the businesses are folding. They should take the blame, in fact. The remuneration over the years has been very, very low, below the PDL, so the salary has not been adequate. So when you talk about releasing or downsizing, that's the term they want to use, obviously we need to compensate because people have not been earning adequate salary.
That was ZCTU Secretary General Japhet Moyo. You also heard the views of MCOS Director John Mofukari. They both spoke with Studio 7's Jonga Kantemiri from Harare. After its Harare protest was quashed by police on Saturday, the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, or ZCTU, says it is now turning to the courts for legal protection ahead of a rescheduled march over the ongoing worker retrenchments across the country. While its demonstrations in Bulawayo, Gweru, Maswingo and Mutare proceeded without incident, the ZCTU says its Harare march was broken up by police before it even started, and its leaders were harassed and forced into police vehicles before being dumped separately. PTUZ General Secretary Raymond Majongwe was assaulted. Moyo tells reporter Ntunga Milingomo, they are now planning more marches, adding more and more companies continue to retrench workers without government intervention.
We have to now regroup and organize again another demonstration. We did not have a court protection on Saturday because the police gave us a negative response on Friday, very late, so we are unable to go to court and seek for a court protection. But we are planning now to go to court and again go back to the streets and do our demonstration. We believe it is within our right. It is within the provisions in the Constitution. Therefore, we are not stopping. We are reorganizing. We are going back to the streets.
And what's the situation like in companies these days? Are people still being fired randomly?
Yes, the onslaught is going on. We now see people who are leaders in the trade union structures. We see these people being targeted now.
That was PTUZ Secretary General Raymond Majongwe. On the line is reporter Ntunga Milingomo from Harare. Apologies, that was Japhet Moyo, ZCTU Secretary General. He was speaking with reporter Ntunga Milingomo from Harare. Now let's hear what Majongwe says his ordeal was at the hands of the police.
I was picked by the police, forced into a vehicle. I was assaulted and driven around town and dumped around the 7th Street, where a white Raum car came with three occupants, and they wanted to force me in their car. And to me, this was a clear attempt to abducting my person. But I resisted until I got picked up by President Matombo somewhere in town. They then proceeded to do the same to many other of the ZCTU leadership, basically because they wanted to beat the shepherd so that the flock scattered. But the most important thing was we remain resilient, resolute, committed, unequivocal, and determined to move forward and say the workers of this country are being given a torrid time by their government that they voted, a government that liberated them from Ian Smith and colonialism.
That was PTUZ Secretary General Raymond Majongwe on the line with reporter Ntunga Milingomo from Harare. The African Union today celebrated International Youth Day, which is marked on the 12th of August each year, with the African Union Commission hosting a special gathering in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, with African youth taking seriously to information and communication technologies. Social media activities were also used to mark the day, held under this year's theme, Youth Civic Engagement. Tomorrow, the Commission will host a Twitter chat between African Union Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma and youths around the world joining the international community in marking International Youth Day. International Youth Day focuses on issues affecting youth the world over, and this year, under the theme of civic engagement, it is meant to move an open dialogue and opportunities for youth to engage politically, economically, and socially in the countries. For perspective, reporter Tatenda Kumbo spoke with the AU's youth officer, Daniel Adugna, who says African youths must do what they can to claim their civic space as tomorrow's leaders.
Youth civic engagement has been an interesting topic. It's probably one of the most interesting topics for most young people on the continent. So today, basically, we brought together all young people from across the continent that are residing in Addis Ababa. So the aim was basically to understand what civic engagement means today to young people in the 21st century, and then to understand what are the challenges young people perceive to be facing today in their everyday life. And third of all, to link the two, how can civic engagement solve some of those challenges.
And what exactly does it mean when you are calling for youth to partake in civic engagement?
It could be in terms of looking for belongingness, giving back to community, being law-abiding citizen, and different examples were raised. Participants were offering different examples, what they feel or what they are doing to as civic citizens or young African citizens who are very civically engaged and proactive. And the examples were diverse and actually quite inspiring.
Can you give us some examples of some of the challenges that the youth said they're facing?
The perceived challenges were primarily looking at first the institutional arrangements that exist in the current systems. That means the gatekeepers in today's society may not necessarily recognize that transformation, what civic engagement today means to young people. There are still very big relevance and importance that people put on movements and, you know, those activities around revolutions and everything that came around political ideologies from the past, which actually mean very less to young people today.
That was the African Union's youth officer, Daniel Adunya, speaking with reporter Tatenda Kombo from Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. And now an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The votes have been counted and the results have been posted for the April 13th, 16th national elections in Sudan. Despite a wide-scale elections boycott, President Omar Hassan al-Bashir and his National Congress Party are claiming victory and a mandate for continued rule in the troubled East African nation. Voting was extended to address low voter turnout and problems in distributing ballot materials in some locations. But with many candidates dropping out of the races to protest restrictions on campaigning and the government's backtracking on an agreement to hold a national dialogue with the armed and unarmed opposition along with civil society to address the underlying causes of internal conflicts, turnout was reported to be low even as voting stretched into a fourth day. The United States and its Troika partners, Norway and the United Kingdom, regret the government of Sudan's failure to create a free, fair, and conducive elections environment. Restrictions on political rights and freedoms, counter to the rights enshrined in the Sudanese constitution, the lack of a credible national dialogue, and the continuation of armed conflict on Sudan's peripheries are among the reasons for the reported low participation and very low voter turnout. The outcome of these elections cannot be considered a credible expression of the will of the Sudanese people. We condemn the acts of violence during the elections period and continue to support those Sudanese who wish to peacefully advance a comprehensive and legitimate political process of dialogue toward an end to the conflict.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. This is